Hi, guys. Welcome back to your favorite real estate podcast. It's Real Estate Investor MBA. I'm your host, Tejas Gosai. We'd like to start with a big thank you. Thank you to everyone who's made our show possible. We're on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, iHeartRadio, all over social media. We love everybody who listens to our program and communicates with us through social media. A bunch of great questions and created a great roadmap with our program. There's over 50 interviews, all expert guests on these topics. And we'd love for you to check them out. Today's guest is Ryan Reichlin. He's a seasoned real estate entrepreneur. He's the CEO of Shepherd Banks Investment and also investor relations with a company called the Bovita Group. Ryan is going to share his story of how he went from actively managing different asset classes like hotels and Airbnb short-term rentals, how he turned them into high-performing revenue generators for his ownership group, and how he has earned his stripes to allow him to passively invest in triple net assets and mobile home parks that provide some great tax benefits. With the Bovita Group, Ryan and his team offer individual investors an opportunity to acquire real estate assets in the sectors of mobile home communities, recreational vehicle resorts, and campgrounds. And this is all over the country. So on passive investing, why is it so great to reach that level? Well, Ryan went into triple net properties that house franchises like Popeyes. And he also invests in private equity funds like mine, Plug. For those of you who don't know, I've had some successes that I share on our podcast. The private equity fund is called Lehigh Valley Private Equity Fund. And these assets provide what I like to call mailbox money. So once a month you go to your mailbox, there's money in it. It's through real estate investing, and it can't be a better way to mitigate your risk for some great rewards. So triple net assets are structured in a way that the tenants, all of the expenses are put on the tenant for you to get a direct bottom line profit. So the expenses that the tenants take on in triple net properties are the taxes, property taxes, all repairs, all maintenance, CapEx if required. And one of the reasons this is such a great asset for passive investors is it's like a bond. You're getting a 5-6% cap asset, could be as low as 4% for a Wawa or like a Satinder Bank. And the owners rely on appreciation. They can make a long-term bet on a property like this and take a lower return to have less headache, right? So on the other side, my private equity fund, Lehigh Valley Private Equity Fund, is another source of income for Ryan now. With my team, I'm constantly hunting properties, finding the right deals to create a return. Our last quarterly distribution was an annualized 11.2% return. So I represent a lot of high net worth individuals like Ryan, and we find these properties specifically in this market that help us reach our 12 to 18% target return. This podcast is dedicated to the listeners who are thinking about getting into real estate and for listeners who are already actively managing and want to know how they can eventually get to that passive mailbox money. So cheers. Appreciate it. Check out the interview. Let us know online what you think. Take care. All right, Ryan, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure. So I gave you a little bit of a winded intro, and I'd love for you to share with the listeners, you know, some of the big stuff that you've done just to show people where you've come from and what you're doing. And then, you know, just a little bit of your story so we can catch up. We got like 25 minutes. Want to hit it hard.
Yeah, sure. So started like most real estate investors, small, you know, initial property was actually the office that I was operating out of for my main business that I'd done for the last few decades. And we've been renting forever, and the market was down in 2010, and it felt like a good time to own our own space and pay myself rent for that business. So that's how I began. I bought that office in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina, in Charleston, where I started investing, where I used to live. And when I bought that unit, came with one more unit, which we split up. And that was the beginning of learning commercial leases. And I navigated all those leases myself and had a couple tenants blow out in the beginning, right off the rip, you know, no personal guarantees and a couple of, you know, just new businesses and maybe not the best tenants that had bigger aspirations and they were ready to fill too. So learned a couple pieces there and got going into much better leases and longer term tenants. Then started moving into different asset classes down the road. Started with a couple, one of the only development projects that I did after that was a hotel development in downtown Charleston. We took a piece of raw land and we zoned that. And then we ended up getting the opportunity to either build it or just sell it with it permitted, ready to build. So we took the easy road and we sold out of that. And it's kind of just a trajectory of, you know, dipping my toe into different categories like that. From there, probably the next biggest move was three units in downtown Charleston that was Airbnbs on top. And then the bottom were three commercial units. So again, I really liked the idea of those. It was very early on in Airbnb. So it was a bit of a risk, but had a very good friend out of Charleston, Hayden Jennings of Hayden Jennings Properties. He had already was having massive success with a very small unit, probably renting 4 to 5x of what the long-term rents would have been monthly. So piqued my attention pretty quickly.
What year was that?
This was in 2016 when I bought those. So I had about 5-6 years in on the other commercial spaces and a little bit of activity with a couple other investments. And then those we went in pretty heavy on, and that was kind of a big undertaking because three of those units that, you know, stay completely booked 2 to 3 turns a week. I had moved in 2013 out to Carlsbad, California, and was managing those remotely. So it was pretty unique thing for me to be managing them from a distance. I had tried actually some third-party management companies initially, and the returns were horrendous. They just were not booking them properly. They weren't booking them at the right. They had the same flat rates through the entire week.
Just fill in the occupancy.
It was kind of more of a set and forget it. You know, these larger management firms that have hundreds and sometimes thousands of units, and they claim to have all the computational readings for what you should be reading for and using AI and all that for booking it. And at the end of the day, it takes a little bit more than that in my mind. So I was able to outperform pretty much everybody in the Charleston market, even from across the country. I'm the highest, still managing those after selling them. I'm the highest rated host in Charleston, even though I live out here. So just goes to show management properties, you can do those without having to physically be there as long as you know the area and, you know, you build up a network of partners to, you know, to help service the units maintenance wise and stuff like that. Fast forward to March, whatever it was of 2020 when, you know, days before the pandemic was going to hit and I had all these properties under contract for sale and every single person blew out of all those deals. I had all the commercial stuff there as well as all the Airbnbs under contract and everybody, you know, hit the abort button literally at, you know, they were in the final days of DD on those deals.
You were selling the whole lot?
Selling everything right in March of 2020. And so by April of 2020, I was sitting there, everything, my commercial tenants were great. They continued to pay, but the Airbnb stuff would look drastically different for several months. We took on some long-term monthly tenants as long-term for those. So month at a time tenants until things kind of corrected by, you know, by Q3, we were actually kind of churning again and somewhat back to normal booking wise. Made it through the year, decent revenues, got all of this sold by April of 21, pushed us out about a year. New owners are fantastic. Decided to stay on and manage for them because we've got such a good relationship together and they've been great to work with.
Do you mind sharing some of the numbers on a three-unit?
Rough figures, you can be, these are three-bedroom houses in downtown Charleston. People earn anywhere from 90 to 120 grand, roughly, you know, for each of these houses. So if you've got something like what we have downstairs with the commercial units kind of covering the property taxes and the fixed expenses, then it's nice. Then all the upstairs is just pure cash flow. I do a little bit above that as well, those figures. So, and this year in particular, we're even above that. It's record numbers. Will it sustain? My estimations, and you know, I've told the owners as well, I said, don't expect these numbers next year. We'll do what we can, but I think there's a lot of burn off of stimulus money that's piled up for individuals, you know, missed vacations, airline credits that people have to use, you know. I mean, I booked a trip this morning for next week because we have backed up points and all that stuff we just need to use this year.
Cool. Well, keep going. Bring us to date.
Yeah. So from that exit on all the stuff downtown, it was another good investment. I mean, a lot of these things, you know, they're going in the multiples. That was like a 2x multiple. The hotel thing was in the 3x plus. So a lot of these things are kind of bigger scores, higher risk. The Airbnb stuff was a lot of lifting, a lot of work, but they come with higher gains and higher reward. So from there, I said, you know, look, I've had a good 10, 12 year year run of really good real estate, really good economy. And I personally, the last year or so, you know, with all the spending, all the stimulus, and there's just a lot of mismatch in the economics of the market right now in general. I wanted to move into more stable, as well as somewhat hands-off investments so that I could continue to grow my portfolio. If I want to get more hands-on things, then I free up time to be able to do those. So I was really last year, the goal was to sell and to buy a bunch of long-term 15, 20-year triple net deals. I bought a number of Popeyes restaurants, which is kind of top three or four assets in the chicken group for drive-through QSR stuff.
You got to pause for a second. My family owned Dunkin' Donuts for a while.
Another great asset. Another great triple net asset.
The franchise business is nuts, but how many can you share?
Last year was kind of crazy. So Biden put out a nice scare for the 1031. And I went from buying all these triple nets and thinking I was going to sit on them to having assets, you know, go up 30, 40, 50% within a month or two of acquiring them. So in my world, I got to sell that stuff. You know? Yeah. So all of a sudden, you know, I bought those as well as some gas stations. I had a Hardee's and a Chipotle as well in that kind of portfolio of stuff, anywhere from 12 to brand new 20-year leases. So it would have been easy money for a while, but I had also started the last 3 or 4 years investing and getting acclimated with the mobile home park sector. So
that's where I want to really kick up a bit. Everybody, no one talks about this. Everybody's like a mythical creature with the mobile home park world. But thanks for the background. You're a brilliant guy. And I don't think you're calling them triple nets. And just the way that you talk, I'm like trying to pick apart. Holy moly, you bought all these things in such a short period of time. You are like the quintessential person that's going from like active investing to being really smart about passively investing, or, you know, triple nets are kind of passive in a sense.
There's passive really as they come. I mean, really triple nets and syndication. So for, you know, listeners that aren't super familiar with triple nets, these are assets that are, and I like to be really clear on it, they're absolute triple nets. There's a lot of properties that are called triple nets, and then they have the occasional maintenance or some other piece in there that are like, oh, by the way, you actually still have to pay this or deal with it. An absolute triple net is you are getting the exact same dollar amount in your bank account on the first of the month without fail. And in theory, you know, a lot of these are anywhere from 1.5 points to, you know, 2 percentage point increase annually, or, you know, some of these are anywhere or 5 to 10% every 5 years. In a world of 8, 7, 8, 9% inflation, it's a lot less attractive for those kind of bumps. But these are typically assets where you have people with larger portfolios, they're working with higher dollar amounts, you're getting 4 to 6 or 7% returns. It's nothing super exciting, but they're super stable. And if you're buying them in a good area with a good operator behind the lease, you can flip out of those deals, you know, in 1, 2, or 5 years on those increases, as long as the cap rates stay stable with the market. So,
sure. And you're mentioning some of these big franchises. Let's jump into the mobile home stuff.
Yeah, because, sure.
You know, when you told me what you've been doing and how large it is and the scale and, you know, the value add portion of it, it's beautiful. So I want to start at like the basics. So mobile home parks, everybody loves them and people don't sell them. It's very difficult to acquire them. It's a very specific asset class. You and your group have kind of like taken this stuff over and made great returns for investors.
Yeah. So, I mean, on my trajectory, I'm newer to that space. I've got about 4, 5 years of investing in mobile home parks, and I've done it exclusively through syndications. I actually have not done any directly hands-on myself. Mobile home parks are quite unique of an asset class in a bunch of ways that really no other asset class is exactly, you know, functions in that form. So I put them, the closest thing, you know, with multifamily would just be apartments, which is, you know, obviously your niche and something as well that I've come in with you guys on investing too.
Thank you.
And I have another apartment investor, syndication that I invest with, and they do more of they're not the super flashy stuff. It's kind of, but they're bigger deals. You know, there's the kind of the Grant Cardones of the world that are buying, you know, the most class A spaces that exist on the apartment stuff. And they're in best parts in the best cities.
And they're $10, $20, $50 million.
Those are Grant stuff, I'd say on the low end. Yeah, maybe 100, 200 million. And we're the other apartment syndication syndication I work with is pretty much in the 50 to, you know, we're exiting at $200 and $300 million on those deals. And they're usually the last 2-3 years, they've performed incredibly, and they're, you know, in a really good market. How they'll do the next 2 or 3 years is something that I think will be, you know, they'll have a lot more pressure. They're not buying the high cap deals that your syndication has been able to find. And that's why, you know, for me, like, I'm really interested in what you guys are doing with these higher cap deals, as well as, you know, the lending arm side. It's a very unique syndication. So that's how you guys got my attention as well.
Thank you. It was tough to win you over, but it's because you just have, you know, just a different, very unique set of skills. And you've seen a lot of proposals, a lot of funds, a lot of syndications. But with the mobile home parks, they are making some significant returns, and the ability to be able to buy them and then advance them and create, you know, crazy value. Can you talk about that?
So let's, you know, Boavita Group is the company that I've, you know, started investing with. Elias Weiner is the founder of that. He's been doing it for over 20 years, become a pretty good friend of mine as well. He's based in Sacramento, and he's got a place down here near me in Carlsbad as well. He's down usually on the weekends, and great education from, you know, somebody like that. That's so well versed, and, you know, has just lived. He grew up, he's kind of second generation owner operator in that space. But what the Boavita Group does is, you know, we take in roughly $80 million or so a year, and we buy about $200 to $250 million in parks annually. That syndication started in 2019 and has run on that trajectory since that year on. We max out at 100 accredited investors, and then from there we have unlimited space for qualified purchasers who are investors at $5 million in net worth or higher.
These are big numbers you got to put to work.
Totally. Yeah. And been able to do it. You know, the amount of deals that Boavita looks at and, you know, passes on and is able to then put into the portfolio. I mean, previous years, we're always targeted about a 15 IRR. This year, we might be at a 14, just a touch lower because the market's a little bit different. But at the same time, where we start is really not as big of an issue as the upside that a lot of these parks have within, you know, 12 to 36 months of stabilizing, cleaning up, increasing rents, doing proper bill backs on the utilities.
Right.
You know, a lot of these are, you know, the space is unique because a lot of these parks are multi-generationally owned. And they've been, the owners have been happy with them, and they haven't really pushed the envelope of getting to current market rates. Yeah. And, you know, that's what we come in and do.
And they're big, the unit counts. Can you share some of these in the acreage?
Yeah. So that portfolio size annually is about 30 parks. So you could, you know,
30 parks
across, you know, that 200 mil or so in acquisitions. Some of them are smaller. I mean, we have $500,000 to $1 million deals in there, and then up to the, you know, 10 and 20 million, you know, plus dollar deals in there. So a lot of the parks are anywhere from the target range you really want to be in, I think, is at least 50 to 100 pads per per lot or per park. And then from there, you know, what our goal is and what we're either starting with or aiming for is that we're getting all the houses to be tenant owned instead of being park owned. So whatever percentage are park owned homes, we want to take those tenants and give them very favorable financing. We're not really there to make money on financing, selling the homes, or, you know, buying and selling homes to fill empty pads. We're there to make money on the increases in rent and getting the pads up to, you know, current market rates. And the tenants are happy with it, you know, typically because we're coming in and we're beautifying the parks. You know, we may be adding amenities, we may be doing, you know, landscaping and street repairs that are 5 and 10 and 20 years behind. So, you know, within 12 months of us taking ownership, the rent will go up, but the value of the park and property is going to go up drastically. We spend a lot of CapEx in the first year.
So the way to do it, getting big IRRs is tough, but it's doable. I think it's cool because in the beginning of your story, it's like, if you kind of manage it and go do it the right way, you'll win, but you can't really expect someone else to go and do this kind of stuff. You were saying even just the acreage and then, you know, making it a destination for RVs as well. And, you know, some of those items, could you share that?
Yeah. I mean, some of these parks are got one nearby me here in Borrego that has a golf course. And, you know, there's a lot of these places have pools and gyms and really great amenities. Not what people have typically thought of with, you know, with mobile home parks as well. You know, at the basis of it, these are places where you can go and live for $500 to $800 a month, where literally the cheapest house of like like similar square footage or a touch bigger, it might be 2x that. Or you might be in a townhouse sharing walls, or in an apartment sharing walls, where in this scenario, you know, you've got your own freestanding house there. You own it in its entirety. You can maintain it, take care of it. You know, so it's just really different from those other categories. And
it's like, I'm from the hotel industry. So I think of it like a hotel. You got to increase the occupancy, take a lower daily rate to make sure that your hotel is filled.
Yeah.
And then, but your thing is also making it a destination, and, you know, those parks and all the other items that make it an attraction for some of the folks to come back every year as they're traveling through the state.
Yeah. The RV side is a smaller target and piece of it, because we like the stability of the homes being on, you know, the majority of these. And really the goal is, you know, once they're tenant owned, it costs, you know, $6,000 to $10,000 to move a mobile home out of a park. So if you had to spend, you know, 10 to 25% of the value of your home to move, you know, in a regular single family house, the odds of that are very slim. So we have extreme stability in these assets because it is difficult to move out of them. Typically what would happen is somebody would just sell it to another owner if they wanted to move somewhere else, you know. And some of these are second homes for people that, you know, that isn't a place where they just want to spend part of the year and they want a low cost spot to kind of post up in, and, you know, low maintenance and all that. That we see that a lot as well.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing that. How about, we got a few minutes. Would love to pick your brain. You're very, every time I talk to you, I'm like, you just see things differently than I do. Can you talk about, you know, everyone's afraid of what's going on. You've been through many cycles and you've kind of waited and bought things at the right time and price. Crystal ball, or even just, you know, what do you tell people right now?
Yeah, I think the market in general has been pretty predictable, or I've been, you know, pretty bullish for the last 10 or 12 years. Under the last administration, there was great things put in place that helped out people in our industry. One in particular is, you know, in the 2017 Tax and Jobs Act, you can accelerate depreciation on sub 20 year depreciable assets, which is another reason why I'm so bullish on mobile home parks. Mm-hmm. So for, if there's any investors that are interested that already have portfolios of real estate, you can invest with us on this syndication and we will generate about 120 to 130% in losses that you can use against that income on your real estate investments. So these days, I mean, to me overall, it's not as much about trying to predict out like these big pops and trying to get, I've never really shot for the big pops and scores overall. I typically bought things that I just thought were really safe bets, and I like the cap rate and I was getting nice arbitrage on the debt, and it all just added up to be a safe play. I'm a pretty conservative investor overall. I think a lot of people have gotten sick of the roller coaster ride in the market and they're looking for other ways to make returns. You know, people like yourself and Boa Vita, you know, these syndications are, they have prefs in place. We're saying, hey, at the minimum, you know, on your syndication, at the minimum, we're going to give you that 8% before anything else happens. Comes out of there.
Exactly.
You know, Boa Vita is at 5%, except for we're generating losses that are, you know, if you use this properly, you're going to offset all your federal liabilities and you're really going to be basically at a minimum.
It's big for people like in the real estate industry or folks that, you know, 1099.
Totally. It works for ordinary. You can use those losses as well against ordinary income if you're a real estate professional. And the only other place to really get losses like that previously that I've come across, which I didn't really get into, was conservation easements, which are getting some pushback because they kind of overappraised a lot of those properties to get 3 and 4x, you know, against investment and losses, where we're doing this much more conservatively at slightly over 1 to 1 typically. And that's really the play to me is, you know, if you're tired of trying to time the market and figure out, you know, how to get that next big, you know, ridiculous score, I mean, they may not be out there for a while. The market may be flat and the market may just stay really flat and undulate. You know, maybe if we're lucky, that might be where it does for the next set of this administration or maybe the next, you know, 4 to 10 years. Like, that's a lot of the hearsay. So it is harder to predict in my mind what's going to happen. So that's why I'm looking for just safe, stable, consistent. And I know on the first of the month, like the expected returns with these things and where they should be. That's what I like these days mostly.
Let me ask one last thing. Mm-hmm. If I'm a new investor, I've never invested in real estate, I'm scared, I don't know what I'm doing. piece of advice or anything you can tell?
Yeah, I definitely wanted to make sure we touched on that. You got to start somewhere. You just got to start somewhere and, you know, start with something small. Get a single family, like maybe you roll the dice and you can find something that is, you know, able to be rented short term. I mean, the returns on the short term rental stuff in the right markets, which there's really, to me, only a few like really great markets, you know, nationwide, but maybe you can get one of those things and, you know, and then you're going to be along for the ride. It's a lot of learning. It's a big learning curve on those things because there's so many moving pieces and the platforms are really, you know, more guest than host based for sure. Yeah. So, you know, just start somewhere and, you know, you won't typically be able to come into a lot of these syndications, unfortunately, because you have to be accredited, which is to me a shame because you can open up a TD Ameritrade account today if you got 25K and you can be a day trader and you can lose it all by tomorrow. But if you go and find your own property and you get a good lease with a good tenant, it's probably not going to go to zero overnight like the market.
Right. Awesome. Well, appreciate you. Thanks for being here. I will put up your website. We'll have you in the comments. And then the way to contact you, though, Ryan at the Bovita Group.
Yeah, Ryan at the Bovita Group. If we got any investors interested, we are doing another syndication this year. We're 200K minimum. All it is for accredited investors. And I'm in there every year. I'll probably, my aim is to invest into that every year. Also find other syndications like yourself and people that are doing things that where I see security, potential upside, and fair splits. You got one of the fair splits in the game right now. And that is usually how people do start is with better splits. But I love what you guys are doing and I'm excited to be on board with you guys and grow. You guys grow through the coming years.
Thank you so much. And I'll keep working hard for you, but let's keep in touch and then let's check back one day. Yeah. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you. Thanks for your time.
Awesome. All right. That's Ryan. This is Tejas Gosai. It's Real Estate Investor MBA. Check us out. Our website is www.rei.mba. We're all over the internet. Cheers, Ryan.
Thanks a lot. Take care.